Okay, so today is Wednesday, January 24th, 2024. My name is Sarah Schneider, and I am joined by Gail J. Gibson. We are conducting the first session of an oral history interview with Patsy S. Chapelier at her home in Houston, Texas. Okay, so I know you were born in Burnett, Texas, or Burnett, Texas?
Burnett.
And so I'm curious about your childhood, and to start off, if you could talk a little bit about your parents and what they were like, and maybe a little bit about their backgrounds.
Well, I was born in 1931. The Depression was in the United States. My father was working as a laborer on the dam for Buchanan Lake. When I was 2 weeks old, he lost his job, as so many people did, and they packed up everything they owned with me and my older half-brother, 10 years older than I, in the sedan, and went to my grandmother's house in West Texas. And so that was how we started. There were no jobs, so whenever there was a job opening, any place at all in West Texas when I was a baby, my parents would load up and go there, and they might work a day or a week or 2 weeks and then be laid off, and then go back to my grandmother's, and this went on. At one point, when I was still a very small baby, they went to California and tried working there. My uncles, of my mother's, through my mother's family, would hop freights there in Sonora and go out and try to work on the dams. Depression was really, really a hard, hard time. My father had a seventh grade education. My mother had quit in the 11th grade because she didn't have shoes to wear to school. So they both valued education very, very much. My older brother, during those very early years that I can't remember, checked in and out of the Sonora School District in 1 year 7 times. That's what looking for a job during those years meant. At any rate, we ended up, when I was starting school, we were in Big Spring, Texas again, and I went to a private school, my birthday being in October. Somehow or other, they got the money to send me private school. I don't know how, but they did. And so I went first grade all to this private school, and I started second grade there in Big Spring. But from that point on, my father was a salesman, a really good one. And he did various things with insurance and other stuff, and we would move and back and forth, and eventually he went into construction business when I was 10 years old. But moving around, I went to a total of about 10 different elementary schools. So it was quite different. Fortunately, I am very bright, so I didn't have any problem making straight A's, except for penmanship. Solid C's. I liked school very much. It was fun. I loved going to my grandmother's in the summertime out in West Texas. And the Johnson girls lived up behind her, and we played out under the mesquite trees and used rocks to make our house for our playhouse. And you cooked. With quote marks around it, the mesquite beans as food for your dolls who lived there. Mesquite beans are very poisonous, so don't try this. But it was, everybody was poor. The story was that when I was the baby, that first year when I was, you know, November came, was Thanksgiving time, my dad took the car and went out to the Federal Reserve and killed 2 turkeys and tied them under the old car and brought them into town, and that's what they had for Thanksgiving dinner. Wild turkeys, illegal wild turkeys. I had a lot of cousins, and we had lots of fun with them. In 41, first big event in my life was Pearl Harbor. And my family, my older brother and his wife, and son, and a couple of aunts and two or three uncles. All of these people did construction work, and we all went to Ohio to work on a defense plant. So we were all up there on December the 7th, 1941, Sunday, and my cousins and I and my brother, younger brother, had all gone to the movies. In those days, you walked to the movies, and it was perfectly safe to do so any place in the United States. As we were walking home, up came two cars with my dad and one of my uncles, and they had heard on the radio about the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and they came to get us. I finally found out what that meant on 9/11. You have this strong desire to get your progeny and gather them up to yourself and make sure they're okay. And we went to the house, and we were lucky, we had a radio. It was about the size of the placemat, and sat on the table, had an oval top like this. And you sat and you looked at the radio and you listened to President Roosevelt declare war on the United States. I had a cousin who was at Pearl Harbor, and he was almost like a brother because his mother had been mentally ill and my mother was his official guardian. So he was only 16 when she signed the papers for him to join, or 17. So he was very, very young. His boat was shut out from under him at Pearl Harbor. And we didn't know, you know, for a week or two whether he was all right, but he was. Later on in the war years, he was torpedoed off of Africa, and he was picked up and survived. The third time, he was torpedoed in the Gulf of Mexico and picked up, came to New Orleans, got on a bus and came. At that time, we were living in Baytown, Goose Creek. And he got off the bus and got out to where we lived and came up to the door and knocked on the door. My dad went to the door, Junior, and fainted. This was the third time. I had an aunt who was a nurse in the Army. She was in the Blitz in London. I had an uncle who was a fighter pilot over Germany. I had an uncle who was in the march through Africa. I had another uncle who was a CB in the South Pacific. And various and sundry others, I've forgotten all of them. Not a single one got a Purple Heart. Now, one of them got a gold silver star and all that kind of stuff, but things. They all survived and came back, which was very unusual for that large a family. So there we were in Big Spring when we came back to Houston, and I went to school in Goose Creek at that time. That's when I was a Girl Scout, and I got to go to the camp. Let's see, there's Agnes Arnold. I think I went to Agnes Arnold. It's still a camp here in Houston. We have Girl Scout camps, about three of them. And I got to go to Girl Scout camp 1 year. That was a highlight of my, really was something to get to go to camp.
And what were some of the things that you did at camp?
Get bit by mosquitoes. Well, we had mosquito nets over our camp. Just things that you did. Oh, this would be hard for you to understand, Sarah, but we were deathly afraid of polio. And so in the summers when we would have polio problems, they would close all the swimming pools. And as a result, I never learned to swim. Finally, when I got to be in high school, and I was playing around in the public pool and all, I got trapped under an inner tube and almost drowned. And so I took then the Red Cross, learned how to swim. And I can now swim across a pool, and I'm not sure if I can do the length, but I can get across a pool and say, you know, a little bit, but I'm still very much afraid of water. And I'll jump around now. So when I had my children, that's when my youngest son was born in 62, my son. And that's when the polio vaccine came out, was that summer. And he was premature, I'll tell that story later, but the doctor said, you know, don't take him any place, but he said, go and take that sugar cube. And I remember taking my children to get the sugar cube and protecting them from polio. I had a special dread of polio. My mother had a younger sister who had polio as a child, and she was left with one leg short on the other and walked with a limp all of her life. Brilliant woman, absolutely brilliant. And during the big epidemic during the 40s, I had a cousin and an aunt that both became very, very ill with polio, and had to be in an iron lung for one of them. And so I really dreaded polio, so that's why it made so much of an impression on me. But back to me and going to school. Well, I went in and out of Pasadena schools. I was there in Pasadena in the fourth grade, the sixth grade, seventh grade, and then 9 through 12. That was some of the moves that we were making during that time. And in high school, I joined the organization of the Order of the Rainbow for Girls, which is a Masonic-sponsored secret society for girls. And that had a very big impact on my life, the lessons of it, and I was very, very active in that group. I was very active in high school in public speaking and drama. In fact, I first took it in, well, I went to the ninth grade twice. This is really jumping around. When we went up to, in 43, sometime in that time, my grandfather, Stallings, had a help yourself laundry in Big Spring, Texas. And there was an Air Force base there, and a lot of their business was the Air Force guys bringing in their laundry, and they would take care of it as well as the help yourself part. And he decided to retire, and my dad rented the business for him for, we were there about 2 years, I guess it was. Yeah, 2 years. And so I went to the Big Spring schools. Well, they had changed from the 11-year system to the 12-year system just a year before. So when we got there, my brother and I were too advanced, so they promoted us a year. So I did my first year of the ninth grade there. And then we came back to Houston, back to Pasadena, and I wanted to be back with the same people that I had known back in the times we had lived here before. And so I went back and repeated the ninth grade, and because of that, I was able to take speech and principles of public speaking and speech, whatever there was, in the ninth grade, and a typing that year, which I would not have been able to take otherwise because I was taking a college prep type of courses. And I repeated algebra because I liked it so much. I ended up teaching half the class. They would all come down to my house after school to get tutored on algebra. But I credit Mrs. Harton with the training that she gave me in public speaking with a lot of my success as an engineer. In those days, the junior high and ninth grade was in one school, physical building, and the senior high had 10, 11, and 12. You know, they keep changing that around as to which grade is in which room or which building and that sort of thing. But in the high school, I was very active then in the speech activities on a volunteer basis, didn't take any more courses from it, but I started acting, and I did the competition in extemporaneous speech, won the district or something, you know, some did pretty good in that. But I was in all sorts of plays, and in addition to acting, I did backstage work and everything. I just really enjoyed it. And we were very strong. Pasadena was very strong in our music department, our football team, and our drama department. And we put on plays all throughout the year, one-act plays and everything, and seniors did their senior play. Well, we were so active in my particular class, we had two senior plays. And there were 126 people in my graduating class, so rather small class, but still very strong, very active. And the band was award-winning. I had no activity with them myself, but, you know, was very proud of them. And everything.
Do you remember any roles that you played in plays?
Oh, yes. In fact, I've got my scrapbook with all of my programs. The Night of January 16th was the senior play. That was a very interesting play, the one that I had the lead in. We did two, and I can't remember what the other one was called. But Night of January 16th was a trial, and the woman is accused of murdering, I guess, the husband or somebody, and you have all the testimony and everything. And they pull out an audience, from the audience, a jury, that has to come up and sit on the stage and listen to all the testimony. And then at the end of it, the actors have to prepare for two different endings. You're declared guilty or not guilty. I was guilty, and the next night she was not guilty. So that was something.
If we could go back a little bit, I'm really struck by how many times you were moving in and out of schools. How did that like mold you or shape you? Did it make you more independent, or was it something you got tired of, or?
It was just the way that we lived in order to survive. And as a result, I didn't make lifelong friends, so to speak. I did have the one girl, Ernestine, that I had known since the fourth grade, and she ended up actually coming to Rice for one semester. But she was madly in love with this guy in Florida, so she took off there. And I've seen her once or twice since then.
Was it more challenging in any way, or you just didn't know it any different, I guess?
I was so much smarter than everybody else around. I didn't ever have any problems. I never took books home to study. I really had no challenge intellectually.
Do you think that, where did you get that from? Was that from your parents, or?
I was just blessed with a very brilliant mind.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
And
no, my mother's family were very brilliant people. My father's were all very, very intelligent. My mother's family was extremely intelligent. My mother was the second of 12 children. And her husband, my mother married when she was 17. She left home because she quit school at 17 because she didn't have shoes to wear. Okay, you heard that. And then she got married. And she had a son, my older brother, on October the 12th. And on October the 28th, I think it was, my Aunt Serena was born. 9 months later, when my brother is 9 months old, her husband dies. And then a year later, her father dies, and then the 2 weeks after my mother's father died, number 12 was born. So my grandmother was left with 8 children, you know, under the age of whatever it was, small ones. And her brothers wanted to split up the family and, you know, I'll take Joe and Jack and so on and so forth and separate them out. But she was determined not to do it, and she kept them all. And so my mother moved back from the ranch where she had moved my mother married into a very well-to-do family. But then she moved back to town to live with her mother to help raise these menagerie of kids. And my grandmother took in washing. This was in the 1920s. And that was how she managed to have money. And eventually they started the oil exploration out there. And she cooked food and eventually had men who also lived there, as well as being boarders. And so that's how she raised the money for it. And during the Depression years, when money was so very, very tight, the older children, who were all, whenever they could get an extra dollar or two, they would put it in an envelope and mail it with a 3-cent stamp. And so one of my younger aunts said, whenever we needed something, Mama would say, something will happen, it'll be all right, And sure enough, a letter would come, and there would be a dollar that they would be able to have whatever they needed the dollar for. And that's how they survived. My grandmother was a very unusual woman. Very unusual.
And was this the grandmother that you were talking about moving to West Texas to be with her?
Yeah.
Okay.
My mother's mother, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But no. But of that family of 12, I'm sure I'm right about this. The two oldest boys were like my mother. They had left. They started working on ranches very early. You know, they never finished high school. They both ended up millionaires, as one of them was a general superintendent in the construction business for companies like Stearns Wheeler and so on. The others all, there were six brothers and six sisters. Red, Joe. Five of the six ended up in construction. And they were every one of them foreman of, do you know what a rigger is?
I have a sense, but how would you describe it?
It's somebody that works with the steel on these, you see these gigantic structures going up and all the steel work going up?
Mm-hmm.
The riggers are the one that go out and put that steel work up.
Mm-hmm.
It's downright scary.
Mm-hmm.
They built half of the stuff up and down the channel, they built half of it. One of my uncles, the second oldest one, was general superintendent for one of the trains at Oak Ridge, Tennessee. You know what trains I'm talking about, the nuclear trains. He was general superintendent for that.
Mm-hmm.
So they were pretty smart people. The women, the three youngest girls, they, needless to say, my grandmother was well known throughout the town for what she did and all, and how she kind of a woman. And so some of the rich ranchers around there sponsored them for additional schooling. The oldest one, the woman with the hip, the polio survivor, she decided to go to business school because she could go in a year and then be able to make a living. And so she did. She ended up being a city manager and having her own floor company and she was a brilliant woman, just all sorts of things. The two younger sisters, one of them went to Scott & White and graduated from there in 1934, I think it was. And again, one of the local ranchers paid her tuition for her to go to that nursing school. The youngest sister of all, she didn't mature until the time that the war started, and she got married very young and married one of the guys that was one of the fighter pilots, I think, was her husband. She's the one that ended up with polio. So it was a pretty amazing family, all in all.
And how much contact did you have with the extended family members? You know, you were talking about...
Every Christmas, anybody that could went out to West Texas for Christmas.
Mm.
I mean, that was essential. And if you could, in the summertime, I've got lots of different family pictures of different groups of kids. Well, who is that standing next to? And I've had to identify some of them all. And when did this happen? And when did that happen? But I can remember sleeping on, the kids all slept on pallets on the floor. A pallet is a pile of quilts. And you put your bedding down and you step on the floor. We all slept like that. And one year, my grandmother had, his house was sort of on the edge of town. Sonora's not a very big town. And so she always had a cow and she had chickens and she had fruit trees and she canned and she had her garden. And she was pretty fabulous. She had this cow. When I was a little kid, I guess it must have been by the time I was in the first grade or something, I was afraid of the cow. And my brother told me, my younger brother, I have one brother who's 15 months younger than I am, and so he told me my mother tells the story. You don't need to be afraid, Patsy. Big Mama keeps her cow in a cage. But that's the only thing that he had ever seen. Yes, childhood memories. I guess my favorite memory is my daddy pushing me in the swing in the park. One of those great big, must have been 12 feet tall, huge tall thing. And he would jump to, you have to jump to get the thing and push me, and I would go so high. Oh, that was so, that was such a thrill.
So you had a lot of these experiences through schooling and extended family, a lot of role models, I guess. So you're in high school, and you're basically tasting a lot of different things, right? Drama and algebra.
Yeah.
Like, is there anything you didn't do well, I guess?
I'm very klutzy. Yes, I could never do a backward roll.
Oh.
Luckily, I got sick in the ninth grade, and got very, very sick. That was just after the war, and almost had pneumonia, and they had to give me penicillin. And have you ever had them stick a horse needle in your backside? That's what it felt like. I mean, I could, it was a gigantic needle. The more I tell it, the bigger it gets. Well, the doctor gave me that and said that they needed to move me to out west where I would have lots of sunlight. But instead of that, we bought a sun lamp, and I came home after school every day and turned up, stripped off, sun my front and sun my back. I had a beautiful tan. Nobody could see it, of course, but he wrote me an excuse to not do physical education that year. And I used that excuse all through high school because I was always the last one to be picked for whatever you pick somebody for. I am most uncoordinated athletic person you've ever seen in your life. When I was chairman of the Fuels and Petrochemical Division, we had a meeting here in Houston, and we went out to one of the local little rodeo things where they have, and so they had a cow chip pitching contest, and I had to go down and participate. And I threw my cow chip, and it went right straight up and came right straight back down. I am not physically coordinated.
And so when you were younger, in elementary school, in the different elementary schools, what kinds of classes and things did you like at that point in time? Were there certain classes you gravitated towards as a young child?
I always liked the math. Uh-huh. I always liked math. And I thought history was, I liked everything. I mean, it was all very interesting. I knew very early on that I wanted to do something in a scientific area.
And why was that? Did you see someone else doing it, or just?
I was going to save the world.
Ah.
I had this dream of saving the world. I mean, I really had a pretty big ego, I guess. And it was very important that I should do something that would really make a difference. And in fact, there was a comic drawing in one of the high school papers. I told Wallace came to Rice with me. He ended up at AA. And I apparently came out to him and said, so-and-so was a better scientist than you and I will ever be. Or something like that. So they had a picture of me with, the lightning rods coming out and the ideas, a drawing caricature, saying I was going to be a great scientist.
But you can save the world being a nurse. You can save the world through being a great actress.
Oh,
I mean, you had all these talents.
I was going to do brain surgery.
Okay, so
I was going to do brain surgery. In fact, I had an idea. What is this contest they have for the kids? The competition and the science contest where they do things and they have a judging every year.
Like a science fair?
Science fair.
Okay.
That's it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, they were just starting those things back then. And I had an idea. And my idea was that I had just found out about the right and left sides of the brain and stuff. And my idea was that if you have an accident, you could train the other half of the brain to take place of that. Well, sure enough, it turns out that you can do that. But of course, I didn't know how to do anything for an exhibit or a science fair to show that, so I didn't do anything with it, but that was my idea. Over the years, I've had a lot of different times I've had ideas and inspirations that have turned out to really be pretty good and pretty realistic as to what really happened.
But if I go back to my impression of this time in the 20s and 30s, and you're out in West Texas, wasn't there a place for women and they didn't do things like that? Or how did you feel about that? Did you see a lot of independent women? And
well, I wasn't there in the 20s, remember, but the 30s. I don't think when I was a kid, you know, up until the time I'm 10 years old, first 10 years, I don't think I ever felt anything about that at all. But don't forget, my formative years of high school was wartime. Rosie the Riveter. Mm-hmm. Everybody, that probably had a big, looking back, that probably had a bigger effect on me than anything else, that I didn't have, I feel like I had any limitations. Mm-hmm. And my dad never expressed any limitations on me. I think that was very, very important. I did get the feeling from some of my other relatives, other male relatives, of that, you know, I really shouldn't be doing what I was doing. Yeah.
And you've talked about your dad. Did your mother do any work outside of the home? What was her experience like when you were growing up?
Well, of course, she was a widow by the time she was 20 years old. And so she had, during the 20s, she had her own business, a cafe, and then she worked with her sister in her business in Big Spring. And then when she married my father, and there weren't any jobs. No, she, when I was a small child, she was a housewife. And, in the 40s, when Daddy stopped salesman and started doing his own business with the laundry that we had in Big Spring, Mother worked in the laundry right alongside him. She did all the bookkeeping. And then Daddy, when we came back after that, and then he started selling automobiles, and she did all of the bookwork. She did all the bookwork and everything for him. Mm-hmm. My father died in 1960, so again, she was left a widow, and at that time, she started working as a sales lady, for one thing she did, at Josky's in the Gulf Gate.
Mm-hmm.
The first shopping mall in Houston, Gulf Gate. And she worked there. She worked as a night clerk at a local motel. And whatever she could do. No, she worked.
Mm-hmm.
Mother was a very, very sharp woman. Very sharp.
And you said you had an older half-brother who was, I think, 10 years older, is that right?
Yes, yes.
And then you had also a younger brother?
And one younger brother.
Okay,
yeah.
And so it's the three of you?
The three of us,
okay.
And that was it, yeah.
Okay.
My older brother, of course, he married very young, and Sam was, an alcoholic. And he never went to college. My parents wanted him to very badly, but he wouldn't do it. Instead, he got married. A lot of big story there. And he had three children. And he worked as a carpenter all of his life. And he thought he could beat the odds. And whenever he would get money, he would go to Las Vegas and come back penniless. And that was Sam. My younger brother, ended up with his degree from A&M, and he was in the Corps, so he was first in the service for a while, and then he came back and he became an independent businessman. Then she became a builder, and he built our home in Maryland for us.
And what was his name?
Raymond Donald Stallings, R-A-Y-M-O-N-D. And my father was Raymond Dero. And Dad was called R.D. And Donald used R. Don Stallings as his preferred way of doing it. Don was quite successful financially.
And when you were a child, what were your interactions with your siblings, like your brothers?
Well, the older brother, of course, 10 years is a huge difference. So you don't really have interactions with a 10-year older sibling. Closest interaction I ever had to him was when I fell off the porch. I guess I was 5 years old, and frightened his dog, and his dog bit me. If you look very carefully, you can see a scar right here. Mm. Can you see it? It's very, very faint. A vertical scar. I think it's on this cheek. It may be on this cheek.
It's hard to see. But
very, very
yeah.
hard to see.
Yeah.
Well, the dog bit me. So, of course, they had to kill the dog and send the head to Austin to be tested to see if it was rabid. And that was probably the biggest interaction I had with my brother. But my younger brother and I, we shared a bedroom until after the war in 1944, after we came back and my parents were able, had finally had money accumulated and could finally be able to have their first home. And that's when my brother Donald and I got our, I was going into the ninth grade. And that's when he had a bedroom and I had a bedroom. Some of my grandkids cannot believe these stories when I tell them to them. They just cannot comprehend that it was really that way.
So going from ninth grade into high school, so I heard you say you really like math. You always thought you'd do something with science.
Yeah.
But you had all these other talents and strengths too. So
I didn't have a lot of other talents. The speaking, the acting.
Uh-huh.
I didn't really consider that a profession for me.
So you were thinking about a profession?
A job, something that I would make money at, that I would do something with, yeah.
Okay.
No, at one time I did think I was going to be a brain surgeon, and I realized that required going to medical school and a lot of things, and I didn't think my parents could afford to back me for a medical career. Well, they couldn't. I was very lucky to get into Rice, and because when I went, I had no tuition. None.
So what were your other female classmates thinking about? Were they thinking about jobs or how to get married or what?
I don't know. One of them did get married. Two of them did. In my senior. In my class, one girl hurried up and went to summer school and all, and she got married at the end of our junior year. One girl did that. That was very close to me. And Virginia Stahl, who was, of course, we sat next to her, she was a very nice lady, but she had a job working on Saturdays for a dentist in Houston. She lived next to my Aunt Frances out in Golden Acres. And Virginia worked for this doctor. And so as soon as we finished high school, she married the doctor, and she was married to him her entire life and had two daughters. But we had been fairly close before that, but after that we were not close because I didn't went off to college, and she instead was a young housewife. And we had, I guess this is something else that's a little strange. I did not consciously know that dope existed in high school. I guess it probably did. But I didn't know anything about it. It just wasn't. Certainly, I think today every kid in high school knows about it. Every kid in elementary school knows about it. But how much the people have... Did you know about dope when you were in high school, for instance?
Not really. Yeah, Later in high school, yes.
Later. I did not know about dope at all. In fact, I was just pretty innocent in a lot of ways, which is amazing. I really, we had a pretty interesting time. Now, Pasadena was a blue-collar town at that time, and there were a number of us who went to college, but most of them were, you know, my friends and all. But we didn't have any special classes, no AP classes or anything like that. We had well, I was valedictorian, and this was announced before the senior events that I was valedictorian. We had a young teacher, it was his first year to teach, he taught Spanish. And so the senior class went off for their picnic day or something like that. And this man was asked to go along as a chaperone. Because our Miss Mayfield was one of these, you know, elderly ladies, and she'd been teaching for 6,000 years or something, and she couldn't quite make the trip, so he went along to act as, and he had the audacity to start saying that I shouldn't get to be valedictorian because I, quote, wasn't popular. Mm-hmm. And we had a girl in our class. Her name was Cornelia McElvain. Cornelia McElvain. She was the class clown. And when he started talking like this, she stood up to him and told him he didn't have the right to say anything at all. He wasn't a member of the class, he was an official sponsor, and it was none of his business, and Patsy was the best in the class. And she let him know. I had never expected that to happen. It hurt me greatly at the time. It really did. It had a very profound influence on me. And it was really pretty bad of him to have done that. Looking back on it, I can see that. And I think it was because, and I think this is true of most of the problems I ran into as far as envy or conflict goes. It's personal insecurity on the part of the person pulling the action. And I was too young to recognize it at the time.
How did you feel about what Cornelia said?
I appreciated her very, very much. I was surprised she had the guts to do it. Yeah, it was amazing. But no, we had, those were the days. Nowadays, you have all of these psychological tests and everything and what you can do. Well, they were just developing these at the University of Houston Psychology Department. And one of the things that they had was what they called the Kruger Preference Test. And they had some sort of an IQ test too. And they came out and gave us the IQ test and the Kruger Preference Test. And then they were going to, quote, be our advisors as to what we should do. So when I came up to get my results, I found out my advice was, you can do whatever you want to, you'll be a success at it. Quite literally, that was the advice I was given. And I was probably the brightest one in my class and had more ability than anybody else did, and so what else could they say?
Some would find that a burden in a way, like did you put a lot of pressure on yourself, or was that kind of freeing that you could just try what you wanted to try, what you had interest in?
Well, I was actually hoping I would get some, because I really didn't know what I wanted to do at that point. And I was hoping I could get some guidance as to, this is really the way, the track you should take. But I didn't, and I wasn't clever enough to try to find anybody that could help me. Well, fool me. But I knew I wanted to do something in the, you know, the scientific engineering field. And so applied for to go to Rice because it didn't have any tuition, and I would be able to be close to home, and we could minimize costs and everything that way, and you know, probably I could be able to manage it. I hope my family could be able to manage it. And so they had, at that time, they took in 400 freshmen, and they took in so many into the science engineering, and so many into architecture, and so many into whatever they called, academics, which included all the biology people and everything. Is that right? They put the biology people over there, or were they in the science? No, the biology people were over the science at that point. And so you didn't have to declare what your major was when you went in as a freshman. So I went in under the science engineering category because I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
And were you, did you have an awareness of engineering as a field at all? Had you been at,
no,
did you know?
The only thing I knew about engineering was the construction aspect of it.
Uh-huh.
Because I mean, I'd grown up with that.
Mm-hmm. So before we get to your college education, which we definitely want to hear about, I had a few more questions about, you know, your time growing up. And one of them was, what was your religious background growing up? And can you share a little bit about your family and their approach to religion?
We always went to the Methodist Church when we were in Pasadena. I can remember that. The first real strong remembrance of when we lived in Big Spring in the Help Yourself Laundry was directly behind the Methodist Church. And my brother and I went around to the church for Sunday school there. And then we came back, and we were in the ninth grade, and we started then in the Pasadena First Methodist Church. And went to there all through our high school years.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined the church when I was 12 years old. Now, when? And I had to be baptized. How old was I when I joined? Was I 12 or 14? I can't remember. But I had to be baptized because I had not been baptized. I think I must have been 12. I had not been baptized when I was a baby. So I was very active, went to Sunday school and in the high school years, and went to the Methodist Youth Fellowship on Sunday night, yeah, I guess it was. Let's see. I remember in high school being very frustrated with some of my Sunday school teachers, because anytime I would try to ask a pretty deep question, nobody would attempt to answer it or kind of push me off. So I kind of, when I got to college, then I kind of rebelled against it. But the MYF was very important to me because it was a fun thing to do and other people. But I would ask questions that people wouldn't answer. I can remember that. Does that answer your question?
Yes, and I was also wondering if you mentioned spending time with your family on Christmas. Were there any other big holidays that you celebrated together, or things that you remember related to your religious life growing up?
We always had a Christmas tree. Christmas was the only big, so far as being religious.
Mm-hmm.
The family had a lot of everybody getting together over the years of trying. My mother's was a very large family, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have so many with my father's family, but with my mother's family, we definitely had a lot of times. And my mother's household was in Pasadena, was sort of the center of everybody gathering. She was her older sister was a mental hospital patient for all those years. And so she was the oldest in the family and sort of the cohesion. And living around Pasadena, I had, in Pasadena itself, there was my older brother Sam was living. And My brother Donald came back there after the war, and after he got married and all, he came back and lived there. And my Uncle Joe lived there, my Uncle Fred lived there. My Aunt Frances lived in Golden Acres. My Uncle John, Uncle Jack, and Uncle Cliff all lived in Texas City. And Aunt Serena lived someplace around. Is that everybody? So there was a lot of people right around Pasadena. Mm-hmm. And it was nothing to be, you know, sitting at the breakfast table and knock, 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 and, you know, my Uncle George, well, hi, you got any coffee? And, you know, Mother always had the open door and everybody came there. But we had a lot of... during the war years, during the construction time when we were growing up, we were working over in Baytown. Fred, my Uncle Fred, had the biggest house with the biggest thing. So on the weekends, we would all go there because they had the biggest house. And we would make ice cream with a crank freezer. And all of my dad and all the men would play dominoes. And we'd all have a big dinner together. That was a very common type of thing. You work during the week, and then on the weekend you get together. My cousins and I, we played Monopoly. I can remember many, many Monopoly games.
And what other things did you like to do as a child? It sounds like you spent a lot of time with family, and you mentioned dolls at one point.
My little brother and I, when we were real little, had tea parties. In fact, I still got my doll dishes we had tea parties with. I played jacks. I wonder if everybody knows what jacks is anymore. There's 12 different, if you do the whole thing, there's 12 of them, and I've been trying to remember all 12 of them, but there's over the fence and in the pig pen and round the world and gathering, you gather them all together, and whole lot of them that you do. We play jacks. The other thing we loved to do was to go roller skating. And it wasn't like the fancy roller skates they have now. The roller skates that you had metal wheels, and they had little clamps like this. And you had to have on a shoe like this Oxford that I have on, so that you could clamp it into the sides and clamp it and hold it on tight. You're nodding your head. But we loved to do that. In fact, I don't remember going to a roller rink at all in high school. I think I went to a roller rink after my kids were grown. Did they have them back then? I can't remember. Maybe they had them some places, but I just don't remember them. What else did I like to do? I like to read. Oh, I love to read. The year we were, 2 years we were in Big Spring, I read more books than anyone else in the entire county. In those days, when you checked out a book, you had a card, and they would stamp it. So the number of stamps you got in were the number of books that you had out. And so at the end, and then you get a new book, it would staple a new card to it. So I had a stack of about 4 or 5 cards, all completely filled up for the 2 years we were there.
And do you remember what kinds of books you were reading?
Oh, it was all the typical 10, 12-year-old. I read all the Hardy Boys. I read all the Nancy Drew books, all the Bobsey Twin books, all the Robert Louis Stevenson books, whatever I could get my hands on. But I read them all. Mm-hmm. And my children also love to read. It's because their father read to them. Very good. In fact, they tell a story. It could have been told to me, I'm sure. He would take them to the library. I guess they only went once a week. Maybe. So he had a special day that he took them to the library. And the librarian wondered, because this was when they were like 7 years old, 8 years old, and they would check out a stack of, you know, 11 books or something like this. And so she didn't think that my daughter had really read all of the books. And, oh, yes, I did. And So she quizzed her on her. And she told her, you know, that's the story, so and so, blah, 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 and told her the story of every book in there. And so they didn't ask them anymore. They knew that when they said they'd read all the books, they had read all the books. And they all went to the library and they all came back with big stacks of books and read them every week.
And when you were a kid, were your parents, you said that education was important to them, though they didn't maybe have the opportunity themselves. Were they encouraging you to read and to get an education?
Okay. Money was very, very tight. Yet I very vividly remember that when I was real little, we had something, a set of about 8 books, and one of them was all of the fairy tales, and one was, it was a set of 8 books of general knowledge of what you should read and all. And those just sort of disintegrated over the years from use. And then one of the first things they bought when they finally got their home, and that was a set of encyclopedia. Mm. Yes, they valued education very, very much.
And then I was also wondering, you talked about, you know, some of the classes you liked in school. Were there any other teachers, I know you mentioned Mrs. Horton, were there any other teachers throughout your education before college who really made a big impact on you or who got you to think in a new way or that you remember from growing up?
Well, some of them you remember because they were so strict, you know. Probably the one that had the biggest impact on me was the one I had in Big Spring when I was the first time I was in the 9th grade. And I had her for English, and she also taught Latin. And I learned English grammar from her, and she got up there and wrote on the board in beautiful penmanship, and you had to write it all down yourself. Noun is the name of a person, place, or thing. A verb and all the parts of speech, and so on. And then the second semester, she taught you how to diagram sentences. And that probably had a huge impact on my ability to understand the structure of our language and the structure of our sentences. And I found, I did a lot of work during my career with people from other nations who do not have English as their primary language. And I found with an engineering mind, you can appreciate a structure shown in a diagram and understand that when you cannot understand seeing all the words strung together. And I use that many, 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 many times. Did you ever use it in talking to somebody?
Not in that way, but I do understand what you're saying, because languages have different structures, like different pronoun uses or conjugating sentences, verbs, you know, all those things. So.
Well, you probably never tried to explain things like I did in my research years.
No, probably yeah. Not.
I had to explain a lot to a lot of. Like I say, we had a lot of students and postdocs from all over the world, especially from the Oriental languages. Their structure is so different. But I found that probably, over the years, has helped me very much. So I remember my 7th grade, I had a Mrs. Lemon for history, and she was teaching world history, and only had her for, and I was only there half of the semester for some reason, in and ins and out, one semester, whatever it was, but I really got a love for history from her. Ah, oh, what else?
What about that? Was it the facts she was sharing, or the way she shared it?
It's just such an interesting thing to know about all of these people that lived such a long time ago and how they lived and what they did and why it was important for them. She was just a very good teacher. I, I, I had wonderful teachers in elementary school there in Pasadena, the Smith sisters. There were the three of them. One of them was the principal, and two of them were the teachers. And there was a Miss in high school. My science teacher was a young woman, Miss Ham, was her name. She was real sweet and everything, and she made our biology and chemistry, and I guess I must have had physics too. I don't remember whether I had her for that or not. I remember one that made a very negative impression on me, and that was the algebra teacher. No, he was teaching trig. And he was a former coach, and everybody still called him coach. And we had to prove proving scientific, the sign law and that sort of thing. Well, Wallace and I mentioned Wallace before, proved it, and we proved sine A over A equals sine B over B equals sine C over C. And he wanted it to be proven as A over sine A, B over sine B. Whichever way it was, we did the reverse. And he said we were wrong. And I said, no, we're not. Wallace said, no, we're not. And we had to argue with him to convince him that they were the exact same thing, because he really didn't believe they were. And we finally were able to prove it to him, I guess. And that's when I got a very poor opinion of coaches teaching mathematics.
Who was Wallace again?
Wallace was one of my classmates, Williams. He was the salutatorian. And he and I both went to Rice and studied engineering. And he became an electrical engineer.
Okay.
Were you friends with him at that time, or was it more just
a
classmate?
Oh, he was one of my boyfriends in high school.
Okay.
But not after we got to Rice.
Okay.
Now, I had multiple boyfriends in high school, like four of them. That was a lot.
Can I ask what you would do? Would you go on dates, or what kinds of dates would you go on in those days?
In high school?
Mm-hmm.
You'd go to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you might go to the beach occasionally. Except we didn't have a way to get there very often, so I doubt we did that. What else did we do? Or you might get together and play games at somebody's house or something. With Wallace, I'd go over to his house. His dad had a wood shop, and I made a lamp and stuff. We just used the tools. I like that. I remember that. But the other guys, it was going to the movies. I remember. Funny thing, my first guy that asked me for a date was when we were in Big Spring. Let's see, I would have been 12, 13 years old. And his name, you always remember these names, Vince Sims, S-I-M-S. He was real tall. Oh, man. Oh, that was so great. And he wanted to take me to the movies. Well, my daddy wasn't going to have his little 12-year-old, 13-year-old, whoever what I was, go out with any guy and go. So, no, you can't do it because we're going to go down to see Big Mama that weekend, so you can't do it. And literally, we went to see my grandmother so that I couldn't have a date. And, of course, he never got his nerve up to ask me out again. Oh, Lordy.
And then one other piece of, you know, your experience growing up that I'm curious about is you've talked a little bit about World War II and your family members who were involved in various ways in the war effort. But I'm wondering what it was like for you growing up. What were you hearing about what was happening? How did it affect you? What was your awareness of those events?
I had all of these relatives that were there, and they were going off, and you didn't know whether you'd ever see them again. And they would come home, and I would go to my grandmother's. And she had a coffee table that had the glass top on a solid wood. And she had pictures of all nine of them under there. So you saw that. And then you had your victory garden, and you went out and you helped grow the crops. And what the kids did, we saved tinfoil. Cigarettes came with tinfoil wrapped around them, and sticks of gum had tinfoil around the paper. Mm-hmm. And so you would peel that foil off and save it. And then we had a rubber shortage. Mm-hmm. So we lived sort of out in the country over there in Goose Creek. So when my younger brother and I would get in from school, and we were like fifth and sixth graders at that time, we would go out and walk up and down the highway and pick up all the scraps of rubber and recycle the rubber. And we all learned to sing every one of the Anchors Away, my boy, from the halls of Montezuma, shores of... We knew every one, every word of every military thing. And when you went to the movies on Saturday, and everybody went to the Saturday afternoon movie, and you see the serial, and you see the newsreel, and there was all of those pictures, all the war. Now we were very conscious of the war, very conscious. It was, and you, being in construction, we had B stickers on our car to get gasoline. To get gasoline, you had stickers on your car, A, B, and C or something. At any rate, A is the absolute minimum thing. And then B was somebody that had to be able to do something. Maybe C was the doctors, whatever it was. And then you had to have ration books. So when you went to the store to buy sugar, you had to have your ration book to buy your sugar with. And of course, everybody participated in preserving the food and canning food. And this was when you used mason jars, and you had to wash the mason jars in boiling, steaming hot water. You had your sterilizer that you put them on the stove and sterilized them with, and you helped prepare the green beans or the beets or whatever you were putting up, or make preserves or make bread and butter pickles. And I can remember doing all of that. You were very much aware that the war was going on, very much.
How did it feel when the war ended then? So you were, what, in high school?
Yeah, I was in high school.
Did things change a lot, or did a lot of that continue?
Everybody, we were so happy, and people came home, and then it was a great period of financial expansion right after the war. And we had new cars again, and okay, a war story. Nylons, ladies wore nylons. You know what those are?
Mm-hmm.
Hose, made from silk or nylon. And they were in very, it was silk in those days, of course. Well, of course, there was a very great shortage of silk. Well, my grandmother's stallings, we were living in the laundry. Our living facilities was at the back of the laundry. Very, very small little area where we lived. And my grandmother came to visit from California, and she went out and bought a pair of hose she found, and she hid them up in the top of the closet. And my older brother's little girl, she was, you know, 3 or 4 years old, whatever she was at that age, 2 years old, maybe two. Maybe she must have been 2 years old, but she was real curious. And she saw those hose up there, and she went in. She wanted to know what they were, and because she saw grandmother hide them. And so sure enough, she got into them and put a run into them. And that was a great tragedy. But yeah, we knew the war was going on. Some of the stories are like that.
Well, can we take a break?
Yes,
let's take a break.
Break.
Yeah, break it up. Oh.